Football Legends Live. Brian Urlacher, Lawrence Taylor, Mean Joe Green, Randy White, Dan Hampton, Anthony Munoz, and dozens more. Gridiron gods of the past 50 years who defined the game. Pro Football Weekly presents Football Legends Live. September 8th, the Rouse Center for the Arts in Crystal Lake. Get your tickets now at ProFootballWeekly.com. Presented by Rum Chata and Centegra Health System. Don't miss out on Football Legends Live. One night only. September 8th. Get info now at ProFootballWeekly.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the Pro Football Weekly podcast. My name is Dan Mott, and we thank you for being with us once again this week. Guys, the countdown is over. We have football on TV this week. The preseason is here, and if you're like me, we're very excited to have it back. I know that Pro Football Weekly managing editor Arthur Arkish, who is alongside today, is... What's up, Arthur?
Hey, what's going on? Definitely excited. Preseason game number one, probably not generally a ton of intrigue, but there are some off and on-field storylines in addition to Bears-Ravens that I think are going to make this even more worth watching than usual.
Also joining us in the excitement is Pro Football Weekly NFL writer Eric Edholm. What's up, Eric?
Don't assume I'm excited. I could be really angry and really despondent over here, but no, you're right. I am actually excited, and not only to for this football game on Thursday, but also just to be here with you guys. That's really it.
Oh, that's really nice, Eric. I like
that. Yeah, thought it was. Yeah.
Today we're going to be looking at news around training camps. Plus, we'll be looking at some so-called cliche stories coming out of camps. Guys, let's start with some more of the NFL national anthem chatter. The league and the NFLPA are attempting to come up with clear anthem rules to avoid repeating the mistakes of the spring's ill-fated attempt. All this ahead of Thursday's preseason game featuring the Bears and the Ravens in the Hall of Fame game. Eric, will we see this being an issue in these preseason games?
That's the big question, you know, and the teams who are playing in this first game, the Bears and Ravens, have been asked about what their plans are, what they intend to do. It doesn't seem like, you know, if they do have a plan, they're kind of keeping it a little quiet, but there does seem to be some uncertainty. Are they going to, you know, come out on this national game and make a statement, or, you know, choose not to until, you know, at the request of the union? We don't know. I mean, this is all kind of speculation, I think, and Arthur, there's just, you know, I doubt we're going to have any kind of resolution before then. The question then becomes, okay, does something happen in the preseason? Does something happen prior to week one? Again, I've still felt a little bit of optimism that a deal can be worked out, because the NFL has already told Jerry Jones to clam up on this stuff. He's spoken out. The league has told him, look, keep quiet. We're trying to work on this thing. We're trying to make a positive resolution. Or at least that's some version of what happened. And then, you know, the union's been awfully quiet as well. So the idea is that, hey, maybe they are making some progress on this thing, or have some hope that they can come to some common ground on this.
Leave it to Jerry Jones, right? 1 year after the whole Zeke Elliott saga and people wondering whether he was putting the Cowboys' best interests and his own in front of the league's. And now here, the league and the NFLPA actually release an encouraging statement saying, not saying as much, but acknowledging that they kind of screwed this up again and they're going to try and make it right. And in the interim, Jerry Jones spouts off and said he's going to fire anyone that protests. And sure enough, I believe it was USA Today, Eric, that had footage of Jerry before Cowboys practice earlier this week. Yes, I guess they now play the national anthem before Cowboys practice. And what was he doing? He was wearing his hat. So it's just the hypocrisy of the whole league and Jerry Jones specifically is pretty startling. All that being said, I don't anticipate anything with the Bears. Matt Nagy said whatever they do, they're going to do it together. Remember last year, they all had their arms locked. So I don't think anyone's going to be going rogue on that side of things. Certainly not like Jerry Jones did going against his other owners and the NFL's wishes earlier this week.
Let me get this straight. National anthem before training camp practice. That's what you did say, correct?
I'm pretty sure I have that story correct.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. I just wanted to run it through my own ears one more time and just make sure I heard that right. So, yeah, it obviously is a bizarre situation. This whole thing is, you know, as I've said all along, the NFL made this problem not go away, but become mushroom into something much bigger. And inaction probably would have led to nothing happening this season. Instead, they decided to create this problematic policy, and it's just sort of created even more tangled web.
Arthur, if I read it right, basically Jones, I think, came out and said, you know, if you don't like it, you can leave. And I know some people took sides and said, well, that's typically how it works in a workplace. If your boss tells you to do something, you don't do it. Chances are there's consequences for that. But I think the NFLPA has stepped in and said, well, wait a second, that's not how this works, it's especially with the way these contracts are. I mean, is that how I'm reading this right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is nothing in the NFL rule book that says that players have to stand during the anthem. So Jerry Jones is making his own set of rules, which, again, he's a private employer, and I suppose he has the right to do that. But it's a bad look, obviously, and it's an even worse look when you consider some of the other things that Jerry Jones is willing to look the other way about on his roster, in his locker room. And I can't say it as eloquently as he did, but I would just encourage our listeners to go YouTube the video. I believe his name is Dale Hansen, a Dallas news reporter, and he has a short statement on this from earlier this week. It's only a minute long, and it kind of just expounds upon what I just said, but he really nails it, how hypocritical Jerry Jones is and how he's really not doing anything good for the league with his stance on this one.
Absolutely, and I'm sure as we keep saying that, unfortunately, this will likely be a lot of the headlines, especially for these first couple of preseason games, and I'm sure we'll be keeping our eye on it. Guys, let's get to some news around camp, starting with injuries. Eric, several wide receiver injuries hurting teams early with Josh Doctson in Washington, who was impressing at camp, now out a reported 5 to 6 weeks to what we're hearing is a possible broken collarbone. I know some have said just a shoulder injury. This is pretty fresh news as we tape on Wednesday. Have you heard more, and how does this affect the depth at the receiver position in Washington?
Yeah, obviously, you know, shoulders are tricky to begin with, and collarbone, obviously, if it's a broken collarbone, we've seen that injury to, you know, quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers and people like that, and it can take anywhere from, you know, 5 to 6 weeks at the very minimum to as much as 8, 9, 10 weeks, depending on the location of the break, the severity of the break, the cleanness of it, that sort of thing. I mean, I'm no doctor, but I've seen a pretty wide range of these things over the years. And so, you know, this is not like a knee sprain where it's typically, you know, within a 2 week window and you can safely project. So we have to seriously wonder whether Josh Doctson's going to be ready for the regular season. And I'm guessing he won't be. So you start thinking about, you know, Jamison Crowder trying to bounce back, you know, Paul Richardson they bring in. Obviously they've got some other guys. They drafted a kid late, Trey Quinn, that I thought was a pretty good receiver. I had him as more of a fourth, fifth round pick. I think he was, you know,
Mr. Irrelevant.
Yeah, Mr. Irrelevant. I was going to say, I couldn't remember if he or Austin Prohl was Mr. Irrelevant, but I know it was one of the last picks of the draft. And, you know, Simi Cobb's a kid out of Indiana I thought had a draftable grade. They have him there as well. Brian Quick, I believe, is still on the roster and trying to vie for a role. They've got some tight end talent, but this is a blow. I mean, you have Alex Smith, and you want to pair him up with a potential number one, Arthur. This is gonna suck into your offensive prowess a little bit.
Well, yeah, he's the only guy that profiles as that potential number one, the downfield target, red zone monster. His flashes have been brilliant. They really have, but he has not been able to sustain them. Injuries, of course, were the story in his first season, a little bit of inconsistency in year two. So we'll see if this does, in fact, set him back. But obviously the last thing Washington was looking for, Dan.
Arthur, Doug Baldwin of the Seahawks out multiple weeks due to a sore knee. Who will need to step up in Seattle?
I don't know who's there. I guess Amara Darbo, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that name correctly, a mid-rounder out of Michigan last year, is one guy you'll keep an eye on. You know, Tyler Lockett, another guy who has really had some impressive spurts of play, but has struggled with injuries. But remember, we just mentioned Paul Richardson. Obviously, he left Seattle, the former second-rounder, to head to Washington. Obviously, Jimmy Graham is no longer in the equation. So Doug Baldwin means a lot. I mean, we always talk about what Russell Wilson means to the Seahawks overall, but to that receiving core and that offense specifically, Doug Baldwin, it kind of starts and ends with him. So we'll see. It doesn't sound super serious per se. We're not going to worry about it yet here on August 1st, but I do think it kind of magnifies just exactly what Seattle is up against after an offseason of turnover at multiple positions.
I'm sure a lot of frustration with Seattle fans out there. That's it's hard, I think, when you have so many people that have left, and now you see some of your top talent getting hurt, especially before the season has even kicked off. That's just got to be very tough. Eric, Jordan Matthews, now formerly of the Patriots, was released following a hamstring injury. Could the Patriots be planning on bringing in a veteran like Eric Decker after he reportedly visited the Patriots?
Yeah, visited and worked out, and it's kind of been on the radar for a month or two. I think the Patriots kind of saw what the worst case scenario might be, and they're not too far from it. Obviously, Julian Edelman is suspended the first quarter of the season. He's out four games. Chris Hogan could be a good, you know, sort of pseudo number one, but he's had injury history too. He's fine now, but who knows a month from now. So, yeah, Matthews, severe hamstring injury. They just decided to cut bait with him. They do bring in Cordarrelle Patterson this offseason, though, and the word is that he's getting a lot of work with the ones, that he's not just this kick returner that everybody assumes Belichick brought him in to be. And, you know, Cordarrelle Patterson, people may not have looked at the fine print, but he's averaged 10 yards a rushing attempt, too, in his career. Actually, more yards per run for a wide receiver than catching, you know, catching the ball. So that's, you know, he's kind of one of these big, super athletic, multi-talented weapons who just hasn't developed as a full receiver yet. I think he's got a shot to contribute. I think Philip Dorsett has got a shot. They drafted Braxton Berrios. He's been trying to get healthy, but, you know, unless somebody like Kenny Britt steps up, it's going to be a bit of a hodgepodge early. We may not know, you know, the final four or five receivers on the roster are going to look a lot different by the end of the season.
Arthur, as far as Matthews goes, when he heals from this hamstring injury, he had 25 catches for 282 yards and a touchdown for the Bills last season. Where do you think he winds up ending up?
I mean, he's now has, you know, one really good season with the Eagles as a rookie, and it's kind of been downhill since. So he's going to have to prove first and foremost that he can stay healthy and be available. But he still does bring, I think, a unique element to a passing game potentially with his size and his slot experience. So I was very excited about the prospects of him in New England. Obviously, we've seen the Patriots churn out one, you know, reclamation project into a star after the next. But at this point, I don't know. I'm kind of in wait and see mode on Matthews. It's been a while since we've seen any decent stretch, you know, sustained stretch of play from him, Dan.
Just opening it up to really both of you, any other major injuries around the league? It seems as though they keep popping up, and year after year, we have some key guys go down, whether in practice or these preseason games, and it throws the whole team's season projection into a spin.
Yeah, Arthur, maybe not as many, you know, big name injuries or setbacks, but, you know, contributors, Ross Cockrell in a thin Panthers secondary, you know, Jake Ryan on a Packers defense that probably needs as many warm bodies as it can have, especially a linebacker, which might be the, you know, one of the bigger weaknesses on the team. So we've seen a couple early who, you know, they may not be household names, but I'm sure their defensive coordinators are sitting there saying, all right, now somebody has to step up. Our depth just took a hit. These are contributors on both defense and special teams. So those are a couple that I've seen over the past couple days that are at least notable, I think.
Yeah, no doubt. I think you hit it on the head. I don't know if it's so much the names as the positions they play and the depth situations on those teams in Green Bay. Now you'll look at the rookie Oren Burks out of Vanderbilt. You'll look at Josh Jones, the second-year player, sort of the hybrid safety linebacker. In Carolina, I don't know. I mean, we talked on this podcast a couple weeks ago about our concerns in that secondary. Cockrell, kind of an underrated contributor for the Steelers the past couple years. And you want to talk about, I just got a bad feeling about Carolina, guys. What about Darryl Richardson losing your starting right tackle at another spot where you don't have a lot of depth? So not a good start for Carolina. You could throw Eric Armstead up in the mix as well out in San Francisco, a make or break year for their former first rounder there. And then, of course, Jason Verrett, just terrible news for the Chargers. And there were reports yesterday, we're taping Wednesday, so on Tuesday, there were reports that the dude who stepped up brilliantly, even if under the radar in Verrett's absence last year, Trevor Williams dealing with an injury now too. So I feel for Chargers fans. I mean, gosh, it looks like a Super Bowl caliber roster, but first Hunter Henry, now Jason Verrett, who knows what's going to be next, guys.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that was a position of strength coming into the season, one of the strongest top to bottom secondaries in the NFL, I think. And everyone was assuming Verrett would finally have his health. he gets his season taken away from him in a basically a, an injury while he was warming up. It wasn't even
conditioning, right? I mean, conditioning drill.
It's crazy to think, and right, obviously, Trevor Williams, I don't think they're quite as worried about it as they were maybe in the immediate aftermath, but still, if he goes down, it's just another body. And Daryl Williams, I'm glad you mentioned him. I kind of forgot about him. I mean, you know, Taylor Moton could step up. He was a second-round pick, last year. But, you know, they already lost Andrew Norwell. I'm worried about that Carolina blocking group. Matt Khalil has not looked good so far in camp. He didn't look good last year. Ryan Khalil could be in the final year of his career. Jeremiah Searles, the guy replacing Norwell, never been a big fan of his. I don't know. They signed the wrong guy. I mean, I know Trey Turner's a good guard, but they gave him the money that Norwell probably should have received this year. So, you know, they're paying for some past mistakes, and these injuries are catching up to them.
Eric, there was also, I think, a scare a little bit in Pittsburgh with Juju Smith-Schuster having an undisclosed possible injury at practice. I believe that was on Saturday. And has there been any more word on that? I mean, I would imagine that he's okay at this point.
Yeah, I think they're just sort of playing safe with him. And obviously, you know, a young player had a fantastic rookie season. You know, big part of their plans this year. You know, they trade, what's his name, to Oakland, Martavis Bryant. You know, knowing that Juju ran some of the routes that he did the year prior and years prior. And so, you know, with Brown, Smith-Schuster, James Washington, the second-round pick, they could have a beautiful top three. If he's out for any length of time, I don't think it'll be serious. But, you know, you still have some reliable guys like Darius Hayward-Bey. So it would be a big blow, but it doesn't sound like it's anything too serious, Arthur, unless I've missed some information recently.
No, I think the bigger scare, guys, was Ramon Foster, standout guard for many years, obviously. But it sounds like they did avoid a scare with him. I apologize because I'm blanking on the injury, but it does seem like he's going to be on track to return for week one. And, of course, that's big because they just lost their utility guy, Chris Hubbard, along that line that's been so strong. So it sounds like they dodged a bullet there. There are other names, guys. I mean, Ziggy Ansah started out on the PUP list in Detroit. Gary and Conley in a big year, too, in Oakland, dealing with a hip injury. So this is the unfortunate part of the preseason. You're just trying to get guys healthy. But every year, you know, it's inevitable that these things do pop up.
One quick note on Conley, just real fast. I talked to somebody. John Gruden is already irritated by this situation. And you know, he's counting on Conley and you know, Obi Melifonwu and some of these other young defensive backs to develop at some point. And I know we're only a year into their careers, but I mean, with Conley, I know there's some irritation there that he's not back on the field.
And interestingly, the guy who replaced Conley, at least so far, Daryl Worley, who, of course, Carolina traded initially to Philadelphia. I know this is kind of a circuitous thing here, but since we started talking about Ross Cockrell and Carolina going down, of course, it was Carolina who traded Daryl Worley after he ran into some trouble, or before he ran into some trouble off the field, and then Philadelphia cut him after the fact.
Arthur, Ramon Foster had an hyperextended knee injury. His injury was. And also, there are a handful of injuries coming out of Green Bay as well, which is always interesting to me because we've talked about it on the show before. Green Bay always seems to have a next man up mentality, and it'll be interesting to see if some of these injuries are in fact serious. How will they adapt and essentially, you know, have that next man up mentality? One of them being Kentrell Bryce, Green Bay Packers safety, and I believe linebacker Jake Ryan, both suffering injuries at training camp on Monday.
Yeah, and with Bryce, the good news, Arthur, it sounds like he was sort of limping around on the field, but if this was something very serious, he wouldn't be probably anywhere near the field, even in a viewing capacity. So there's, I think, at least a hope that this isn't anything structural wrong with him.
I think so, too. And, you know, it's interesting, Jake, draft pick a couple of years ago, Kentrell Bryce, undrafted. But I think if you ask Packers fans, they might be a little more concerned about Bryce because he has really shown some good things with his speed and his hitting ability. And they like him back there. It's kind of that deep safety. And if they have him, it kind of expands what you can do with Josh Jones. But if Bryce is out there, your options are a little bit more limited. And, of course, they just, you know, they moved on, from Morgan Burnett in the offseason.
Guys, I want to spend another few minutes on today's show just discussing what should be a fun one. This is the so-called cliche stories that are coming out of camps, and feel free to call BS on any of these. Arthur, let's start with Joe Flacco, best camp ever.
Dan, I wanted to call bullshit in our intro when Eric is telling us he's just so happy to be here with us. I said, oh, I thought we were waiting till later in the show to start calling BS. I'm kidding, of course. As far as Joe Flacco goes, though, look, Alex Smith last season, the team drafts Patrick Mahomes. Alex Smith plays inspired football, the best year of his career in year 13. A lot of people want to draw those parallels. I think I saw one person specifically on Twitter. It was Sigmund Bloom, who knows his stuff, fantasy football expert. I want to say football guys. I was like, oh, wait, that's really interesting. Then I started looking a little bit more, and I saw that Alex Smith's passer rating was in the 90s, the 2 or 3 years prior to last season. So it's not like he was a bad player, but Eric, Joe Flacco has been a bad player now for a couple of years. I'm sorry to say it, but he was just not very good last year. And I have a hard time believing that suddenly, and we should mention he had a back injury and he was dealing with some stuff last season. But when I look at Joe Flacco, where he is at this, you know, juncture of his career, and when I look at what's around him, I'm not sure that just drafting Lamar Jackson to breathe down his back is what's going to turn the light on for Flacco at this point.
Well, no, you're right. And yet, if they can coax one more good year out of him, and he did have some good years in you know, pre-contract extension, but you're right, pretty much since the day he signed it, he's been, you know, average to below average at best. And even if he did play a little better down the stretch, I do feel like some folks have forgotten that he did have some good games. Were they against the most fierce defenses or opponents? No, but the Ravens started scoring and were a little more diverse offensively. They didn't have a lot of receivers. They were down offensive linemen. Flacco played okay. So, but I wrote it, I think, draft weekend, if not the night it happened, you know, they drafted Lamar Jackson the next day or so. I said, you know, this is a win-win pick no matter what, I think, because even if, you know, if Jackson's presence gets one more good year out of him or coaxes some more work out of Flacco, angers him, lights a fire under him, whatever, that's a positive result. If Jackson is nothing more than just a flash player and he doesn't pan out long term, he can still contribute to this team in other ways. So, you know, that's kind of the hidden value of that draft pick. You know, it was 32nd overall. If they get Flacco to play well, guess what? It's not a bad thing. That's Ozzie Newsome, you know, one of his final contributions to the team in the draft room was knowing that there can be an effect that goes beyond just Lamar Jackson that could be pushing Joe Flacco to one more solid year. They were a pretty good football team last year. I keep telling people, don't snooze on them.
Flacco is 33. He started 32 consecutive games, so that's the good news. But he's just been a guy, as Eric said, since signing that contract. And one thing I want to make sure I'm not shortchanging him here. The Ravens had the worst set of pass catchers in the league last season, and they have totally made over that group with Michael Crabtree and John Brown and the rookie tight ends. So maybe I might be missing something here. I'll be curious to see Flacco this season because it's obviously just a huge spot. It's kind of a flashpoint in his career. There's no doubt about it.
Well, let's take a look at Chris Carson, better than Rashad Penny. Eric, I'll let you feel this one.
I'm calling some major BS on this, and I'm a Carson fan. Like, I was touting him coming out of Oklahoma State. I said, watch this kid run. He just barrels people over. He's fun to watch. He's your perfect sort of complimentary back. And, you know, he's a seventh-round pick. There was a reason why he lasted that long in the draft. He's kind of got a limited skill set, but he's a try-hard guy. He's got a little bit of burst, you know, has a tiny bit of pass-catching ability, all that stuff. You know, he's a good example of the kind of back you can get at the end of a draft or as an undrafted free agent sometimes and make him into, you know, sort of reliable pros. But this whole idea, and if you listen to Pete Carroll, he is talking up Chris Carson like nobody's business. Oh, best shape of his life and this and that. But if you hear him talk about the other Seahawks backs as well, the ones not named Rashad Penny, oh, he's so fit. Oh, he's in great shape. It's the same kind of rhetoric, maybe not as, you know, thorough as he's dished out with Carson. To me, this is a motivational tactic. This is trying to get Penny, you know, Arthur, you and I watched him at the Senior Bowl. He didn't have a great first day. He seemed a little kind of lost in pass protection. He fumbled the ball. You know, I wanted to look at like him a lot more than I did coming out of that week. But, you know, clearly the Seahawks saw something in him. Maybe that wasn't Pete Carroll's first choice. Maybe that was a John Schneider pick. I'm still trying to figure that out exactly. But to me, this is one of those deals you do to the media where, oh yeah, we're still trying to find out about Rashad Penny. They know what they have. I think they're just using this as a way to kind of push him into performing as well as he can.
No doubt about it. I don't want to oversimplify this too much. Carson, the 249th overall pick two Aprils ago. Rashad Penny was the 27th overall pick in round one. It was a shocker to everyone. Obviously, they don't think that Chris Carson is better than Rashad Penny, or they wouldn't have spent their first round draft pick on the running back, who I should add that I love. His film is awesome. He's unique, too, because he arrives in the NFL without a ton of mileage because he ran behind a couple fellow NFLers at San Diego State, so he's okay there. But I just, I don't know. I guess it's a good problem to have if both of these guys are going to produce for him. I'm not sure. It might just be a non-starter if they haven't done something about that offensive line.
Eric Washington believes it upgraded going from Cousins to Alex Smith.
This has been an interesting story, and I'm not ready to call full BS on this one yet because, you know, Washington is one of those teams that you have to be very careful with when you talk to people there. They kind of have this programmed message that's, you know, comes from down on high and all that, and you know, there's some people there that haven't exactly earned a lot of you know, truth when they talk, so I kind of tend to doubt them a little bit in certain circumstances. But I believe that they at worst feel like they made an even move here, that there was enough, I don't want to say friction, but just enough disconnect between Cousins and Jay Gruden and some of the other people on the team, whether it's coaches or players, to where they feel like they kind of maxed out with him. Like they hit a ceiling, which is ironically what the Chiefs felt like with Alex Smith. You know, they did all they could with him. Good quarterback, you know, did some really, really good things for them, especially in 2013, that was it 14, the first year he was there. But I really feel like the Redskins have this belief that at worst it's a lateral move, that they can get the same kind of good production, which Cousins gave them, and maybe just a little bit more consistency and a couple fewer turnovers and maybe not as many flash plays, but some really solid play. That's my take on the situation, that they're not just slinging BS to the media here, that they truly feel like this was a guy that they targeted, got, and are happy with.
I don't know yet whether they're right or wrong. I think all the points that Eric just laid out are valid for sure, especially about the decision making. Obviously, Alex Smith doesn't throw interceptions. I think he brings a little bit more athleticism to the table than Kirk Cousins. Maybe that opens up Jay Gruden's playbook just a little bit more. But we have to, of course, mention that shortly after the trade, that you know they willingly got older at the position, they gave Alex Smith what, $84 million or whatever that extension was. Good so point. Of course they're saying this stuff about him now. They need to kind of back up the moves that they've made that some people scratch their heads about at the time. Our friend of the program, Ben Standig, he's with the Sports Capital in DC, talked to DJ Swearinger, the safety there, who obviously always says what's on his mind. And he just said, I quote, "Alex has more command of the offense for sure. He's definitely a leader that we lacked last year, regardless of whatever reason." Swearinger went on to say the Cousins, and he didn't blame them per se, but that with all the contract stuff hanging over his head for a couple years, he wasn't allowed to just go out there and play freely, that Alex Smith's teammates, his new teammates, believe he's going to bring that to the table. So it sounds good. We'll see. Alex Smith is kind of the guy I root for because I feel like he's criminally underappreciated and has been for his whole career. And I want to see him have success at this next juncture of his career.
Arthur in Dallas, Ezekiel Elliott looking more focused and in better shape.
I don't know. There's so many things I could say. He better be. I mean, you know, he was suspended last year and reportedly wasn't in shape right when he came back. So, you know, he needs to be. And when you clear out guys like Jason Witten and the list goes on, obviously they lost a lot of leadership from that team in the offseason. I think it's a slippery slope, Eric, if you're going to have to turn to Zeke Elliott and even Dak Prescott, who we talked on the podcast a few weeks ago. Maybe not quite as established as you'd like when you're going to sort of turn the leadership baton over to him. But I don't know. I think Zeke Elliott has a little bit of image reparation to do here still, some trust building to do inside and outside of the building before I'm ready to really jump on this one fully.
Yeah, there's no question that's the case. And I think you're absolutely right to point it out. I mean, I think you know, let's not kid ourselves. The majority of the issues that Elliott was facing, beyond all the legal wrangling and the tug of war with Jerry Jones and the NFL and all that, put that to the side for a minute. I mean, look, clearly there was some improper behavior between him and his girlfriend. So he brought this on himself, right? And once everything kind of started crashing down on him and a suspension was looming, or at least potentially looming, I'm sure it was weighing heavily on his mind. Look how lost he looked in that Denver game early in the season. He looked supposedly overweight. Who knows? Maybe he was up, you know, he was coping by eating chocolate, and I have no idea what he was doing, but he looked heavier. He looked sort of more detached last year. I saw a picture of him in camp the other day. He looked leaner, more cut. So there may be some grains of truth to that, but you're right. I'm sure there is a carefully crafted PR angle here, either by the Cowboys or by Elliott's camp, that this is sort of being, you know, siphoned to the media a little bit. And I'm sure people have kind of bought into it. But I suspect that his focus with this thing in the rearview mirror and his physical condition are probably a little bit better at this point.
Eric, per John Gruden, Jordy Nelson can still run fast.
I want to believe it. You know, I'm a Jordy fan, right? He's a guy who obviously was such a difference maker. You know, Aaron Rodgers would love to still have him in Green Bay. That's been a point of contention up there for a while now. You know, even if some of these young receivers develop up in Green Bay, I'm sure Rodgers would love to have a safety blanket there. And so it was a little bizarre that the way that whole thing went down. And you have other people on the Raiders saying, why did the Packers cut him? He could still play. So I think there is a little bit of guarded optimism, or at least hope that, okay, they may have stolen a player here. They may have gotten a guy, even if he only has two good years left, who can help us in this transition with a new head coach. So I'm not buying in fully, because we saw last year just how limited he was in terms of movement skills, but it's possible. We've seen a handful of guys, and Jordy's hardworking. I think he realizes the end is close. He can kind of channel all his energies into one or two more great seasons and make it a memorable end to his career, because I think, you know, if you can't run, you're not going to be a good receiver. So he probably realizes that and made sure he reported to camp in the best shape of his life. I don't know. We'll see. Is he going to be that 1,400-yard guy? I don't think so. There's no way. But could he be a useful player for them? Absolutely.
And Dan, just really quickly, the beauty of this signing for me, frankly, wasn't that the Raiders need Jordy Nelson to run fast. It's that they need him to run to the right spots, catch the football, and get in the head of Amari Cooper and Derek Carr, two guys that have taken a step back. I think Jordy Nelson's leadership, I think his experience, and yes, his red zone acumen are going to be, you know, the biggest boons to this Raiders offense just when it comes to Jordy Nelson. That's why I like the addition so much.
Arthur, Andrew Luck is rounding into form.
Well, he's throwing NFL-sized footballs now, so that's good news. And I am buying, just because, look, all you got to do is see the look on Andrew Luck's face, and you see a different guy. You hear the tone that Frank Reich and T.Y. Hilton and all these guys are speaking with now, versus, well, obviously Reich earlier in the offseason, Hilton the past couple years without a healthy Andrew Luck. And it helps you kind of believe a little bit. It's just so easy to forget the type of, you know, ascent that this guy was on early in his career and the numbers that he was putting up. So he's the type of dude, so smart, so committed, that allows me to buy into this one. And I'm guessing, I think Eric's going to agree with me on it.
You are wrong. No, okay, I'll I just wanted to throw you a curveball there. Yeah, no, I part of me just would hate to see, you know, there is an emotional angle to it. It would be sad if Andrew Luck could never regain, at least come close to regaining the form that made him a special quarterback. He was special, you know, and you know, we saw times when he wasn't, but we saw times when he looked that he could be one of the top five quarterbacks in the league for a long time. Obviously, that has gone off course. Could it get back on? It's hard to know. I haven't seen every throw he's made in camp. I'm not there in Indy, but I have talked to people. I have read the reports. It sounds like it's about 70% good and about 30% need of improvement. And the fact that Luck has been so sort of transparent about the whole deal and saying that basically that, yeah, I feel pretty good. There have been some clunkers, but we've sat down and figured out what the problem is and why it's not happening. And, you know, there's a good little chemistry building, I think, between Luck and Frank Reich. And the other benefit is that Jacoby Brissett is reportedly having an outstanding camp. So even if there is some grain of dishonesty to this. They have a good insurance plan for a guy who was thrown into the fire last year and handled himself really well. You know, you get traded right, or you get traded right before week one. You end up playing week one and being the starter for the majority of the season. That's just wild. That should never have happened. And yet, Brissett and the Colts, I think, are going to come out better for it.
And finally, guys, here in Chicago, Mitch Trubisky is lucky Roquan Smith's holdout is in the headlines, because when the focus shifts to him, we'll see how inconsistent he has been. Eric, you call BS on that?
That's an interesting way to phrase it. Yeah, I mean, yeah, the reports have been from Hub Arkish, our very own, and Bob Laguerre, who have been down there, you know, encamped down in Bourbonnais, that guess what? Trubisky hasn't looked all that great, and that with all the talk focusing on Roquan Smith and his absence, it has kind of shielded Trubisky a little bit. I think the other part of the story too, Arthur, is that his Bears teammates have said nary a negative thing about Trubisky, which you wouldn't expect, but there's been a lot of positive support too. So it's like, hey, we know he's going to struggle at times. We know this isn't a well-oiled machine yet. It's going to take some time. They still think he's the guy to make it happen. They have no choice, but they still have some real optimism. So from that perspective, yeah, there would be greater exposure if Smith was in camp. There was no contract issue, but I don't think anyone should be freaking out at this point. So I don't know how big it would be.
Yeah, I'm in stay tuned mode. You said it right. You know, obviously, if Roquan's there, we're looking more at the quarterback and the interceptions he's throwing. But I think it would be a mistake not to look at all the new guys he's throwing to, the new offense he is working in, and all the continuity that the defense and guys like Prince Amukamara, Kyle Fuller, and the rest of that crew are enjoying. They should, pardon the cliche, I guess this is a cliche portion of the podcast, defense should be ahead of the offense at this time of the year, and especially in this instance. So I think we cut Trubisky a little bit of slack here. Obviously, he's got to pick things up as camp continues, but definitely too soon to panic, and I don't think anyone ever thought this was going to be an overnight sensation.
Well, we'll find out tomorrow as the Bears and the Ravens square off in that Hall of Fame game. Guys, next week we'll bring you some more camp news, hopefully not too many more injury updates. Plus, we may have some chatter on that Hall of Fame game. You can catch a full preview of that game this week over on the PFW Chicago podcast with Hub Arkish, Bob Laguerre, and I. And I'm sure we'll discuss that game in depth next week over there as well. So be sure to like and subscribe to that podcast if you want more in-depth talk about the Chicago Bears. We want to thank you all for listening to the Pro Football Weekly podcast this week, and we hope that you had on over to iTunes and subscribe to this podcast if you have not already done so. Also, head over to ProFootballWeekly.com for the best NFL news 24/7, especially breaking news out of training camps around the league. As we've been saying for the last couple weeks, we have an event reminder for you. Saturday, September 8th at the Rouse Center for the Arts in Crystal Lake, Illinois. Join Pro Football Weekly for Football Legends Live, presented by Rum Chata and Syntegra Health System. It will feature Pro Football Hall of Famers Brian Urlacher, Mean Joe Green, Lawrence Taylor, Anthony Munoz, Randy White, and Dan Hampton, along with MCs Pat Boyle and Dave Kaplan. Plus, the Pro Football Weekly crew, like Arthur and Eric, will be there as well as other surprise guests as we celebrate Pro Football Weekly's honorary team for the ages and the greatest Bears team of the modern era. Tickets are on sale now at ProFootballWeekly.com, so be sure to get yours today. As always, a big thanks to Umphreys McGee for the use of our theme song, Out of Order. You can find them on iTunes, so go and check them out. We want to thank you once again for listening, and for Eric Edholm and Arthur Arkish, I'm Dan Mott, and we'll talk to you next week. Take care, everyone.